We're going to get started with some music, and that's a concert from Amos Garrett and Maria Muldaur. Now, these two met up in the 70s when they were playing a kind of roots blues music that you really don't hear much about these days, called jug band music, Maria in the States and Amos in Canada. When Maria went into the studio to cut her first solo album, she asked Amos to bring his guitar and come along. They recorded a fresh little song, a wonderful record called Midnight at the Oasis, which became a huge hit in 1974, and the rest is musical history. Now, part of the magic of that song was an elegant guitar solo played by Amos. It's one of the few examples of a guitar solo in a song being as famous as the song itself. At the time, Stevie Wonder said that it was one of the finest guitar solos ever recorded, and if you want to know more about Stevie Wonder, look him up. Both Maria and Amos went their separate ways after that hit. Maria moved into jazz and gospel, and here in Canada, Amos went on to become a guitar player's guitar player. Recently, in Musician magazine, both Jerry Garcia and Elvis Costello said that Amos was one of their mutual heroes. These days, when he's not fishing, Amos is playing with his band, the A-Team. And every so often, the two old buddies, Amos and Maria, meet up and play together, and that happened a while ago in Toronto at the Horseshoe Tavern. Here are Amos Garrett and Maria Muldaur.
Oh, what a shock when he found out his key no longer fit my lock. I cried, whoa, baby, you can go back where you've been. Oh, yes, you can. Yeah, cause you've been stepping out, but someone else is stepping in. I was a fool that you could step on. The little girl you would call when nobody else is home.
The Blues from Amos Garrett and Maria Muldaur at the Horseshoe Tavern with more to come. But when they were in town, they came into the studio, and I asked them in an ongoing collaboration that's lasted 16 or 17 years how, when they got together, they picked up the trail.
Well, this particular incarnation of our collaboration started a few months ago, and I went up to Calgary to do a 50s musical comedy called Shabab.
And a theater piece.
A theater piece, yeah. It was at a dinner theater there. And so I was up in Calgary, and Amos was the only person I knew in Calgary to begin with. And to my great delight, he and the A-team were doing a week-long gig at a infamous blues dive called the King Eddie. Yeah. And so every night after my Shabab show, I'd rip my wig off and dash down to the King Eddie and in time to sit in on a few numbers with Amos and the band. And as far as preparing, in answer to your question, I just threw a few chord charts at them and sound check, yeah. Which was sold out, by the way. Remember that? There was
that's right. We had a sold out sound check.
Yeah, people were clapping at the rehearsal. The rest is just really like falling off a log. I say that if ever there was a marriage made in heaven, it's my voice and his guitar playing. So somehow we just weave in and out together. And it's great fun and quite easy. For me, anyway, I don't have to know any chords.
It's the Glissando family.
Yeah, that's it.
Bro and Sis Glissando. Yeah. Well, we do have a way of phrasing up that's very complimentary between my playing and Maria's singing. And, which has been true since, our styles, developed really, I'd say, probably in the late 60s.
Yeah, probably because both of us were very influenced by blues and country. I first met Amos.
I wondered about that, yeah.
When I was in a band called the Jug Band, truly in another century, it seems like, but in the early and mid 60s. And Amos was in a band here in Toronto called the Dirty Shames, which was Canada's answer to jug band music. And then Amos was also working with Ian and Sylvia in the Great Speckled Bird. Was that the name of the band? And Jeff Muldaur, my then husband, and I just became rabid fans of his guitar style. And when we left the Jug Band in 69, we got the chance to do an album for Warner Reprise called Pottery Pie, and we imported Amos and actually several of the other players from Ian and Sylvia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time Amos and I worked together.
So this started as a kind of a place in time where you were all interested in similar musical styles. I wonder how important that you both have the same love for the basic blues or the basic soul.
Well, it's important if you're going to have a natural connection to each other musically. I mean, it's like already you meet each other and you're speaking the same language.
We wouldn't be playing blues and R&B music if we didn't like it.
We both love Percy Mayfield as a songwriter, and we can do Percy Mayfield material that was written, what did you tell me, that Please Send Me Someone to Love was written in 52 or something, and it's still bringing the house down. Here we are 40 years later. It addresses real issues of things people are going through emotionally without a lot of trickery in the words, and if you deliver them with real emotion and with a fair degree of artistry, people are always going to be affected by them. So they never cease to, I never get tired of the blues.
Well said.
Both of us separately and together is definitely much more because we love it than it's the way to fame and fortune. So,
how much is chemistry a part of your ability to work so well together? Personal,
well, I am free of all chemicals.
I gave that up in 1968. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I mean, you keep coming back and going away.
Well, it's something that in both of us, I mean, you feel this affinity. Just like there's certain friends that I don't see for some maybe 5 years, and yet when I see them, it's just like we spoke last week, and that's how it is for us musically and personally. I mean, coming to Calgary, not only was it fun to work, I mean, to play music with Amos, but just to hear his stories and his incredible humor. I mean, whenever I want that magical sound, I know who to call.
That's it.
Okay, when you two get together and you work on stage, what are you listening for in each other when you play together at this point?
The next chord.
The next chord, I was just going to say. I got to get moving a little faster. This is Maria 4, Amos 1 so far. Yeah, and she's not kidding either, you know, because, you know, our memories fail us a little bit occasionally, and where am I now? And we, when you play with someone on a day-to-day basis, sometimes over a time span, you don't really notice how much they're changing and improving and developing, and sometimes when you spend a couple of years apart and you hear them again, you go, geez, I mean, you know, another leap, another giant step for singer kind, you know. And so it's been about 3 years, and I heard her again, and just another quantum leap. I mean, it just constantly inspires me.
But what's the kick for you two in doing in this collaboration?
It's the reunion, you know, again, hearing, you know, what changes and developments and, you know, improvements and new recipes we both like to cook and eat. And
yeah.
We've learned, you know, and, you know, just catching
new
up and
musically, too.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, thank you, Amos and Maria. It's a pleasure talking to you. You've got me all cut up in your chemistry here. I feel like...
God, this chemistry. Don't light a match, anyone.
All right, let's go back to Amos Garrett and Maria Muldaur live in concert from the Horseshoe in Toronto.
Georgia, ooh, Georgia, the whole night through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia on Georgia, ooh, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out for me, other eyes smile tenderly, yet in peaceful dreams I see the road leads back. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia on my mind. Thank you. reach out for me. Other eyes smile tenderly, yet in peaceful dreams I see the road leads back to you, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Just an old sweet song.
Thank you very much.
I always thank you. Well, here's one we just threw in the repertoire. A great song called Fool's Paradise. Think of the life I led. It's a wonder I ain't dead. Drinking and gambling, staying out all night, living in a fool's paradise. My mama told me, my papa said it right. I know you said it, Papa. They said, Amos, you'll ruin your life. Drinking and gambling, staying out all night, living in a fool's paradise. Although I thought I've learned my lesson, from all those fools I have met, but like those fools, those lessons are so easy to forget. My papa told me, my mama said it right. They said, Amen, you'll ruin your life. Drinking and gambling, staying out all night, living in a fool's paradise. Yeah, Ronnie, play this song. thought I've learned my lesson. Thank you. It sounds like Berlin in here. Like all those fools I met. But like those fools, those lessons are so easy, so easy to forget. I often think of the life I led. It's a wonder I ain't dead. Drinking and gambling, staying out all night, living in a fool's, living in a fool's, living in a fool's paradise.
Amos Garrett in concert with Maria Muldaur from the Horseshoe in Toronto.
Up next, singer Maria Muldaur. Her career began in the 60s in New York, where she formed the Even Dozen Jug Band with John Sebastian, who later went on to become part of the Love and Spoonful. From there, Maria went on to work with other jug bands, eventually recording 5 albums. By the early 70s, Maria had relocated to Los Angeles and had begun work on her debut solo album for Warner Brothers. Even though the album features a cross-section of styles that illustrated Maria's many musical passions, the song that broke through was one of the poppiest on the album. Featuring Canada's Amos Garrett on guitar, the song that went all the way to number one for Maria Muldaur in 1974, Midnight at the Oasis. Even though it's Maria's best-known song, she's quick to point out that it really isn't all that representative of her work. If you haven't heard much about Maria Muldaur since the 70s, it's because commercial success was not what she was after. Instead, she set off on a very eclectic musical journey. Throughout the 70s and 80s, this journey took her through gospel, jazz, blues, musical theater, children's albums, and most recently, a heavily Cajun-influenced style she calls Bluesiana. I'll talk to Maria about her musical adventures in a few minutes, but first, from her most recent album, Louisiana Love Call, this is Second Line. Featuring Aaron and Charles Neville on background vocals, that's Second Line from Maria Muldaur's latest album, Louisiana Love Call. And Maria joins me here in Vancouver. Welcome, Maria.
Glad to be here.
When I think of all of the people that you've worked with over the years, great people like Jerry Garcia and Stevie Wonder and J.J. Cale, and I look at the list of contributors to your new album, Zachary Richard and Amos Garrett and Dr. John, I wonder, how do you manage to get these consistently high-quality people all around you?
Well, I have a very high standard of how I want my music to sound, and when I'm trying to express myself in a particular idiom, I just shoot for the stars and say, well, I'll ask the best people in that style of music to participate in my album or my project, whatever it is. And I've been really lucky. I've been blessed, in fact, to find that all my musical heroes find something they like about my music as well. Because you know, over the years, as you say, I've had some wonderful players, and since this was a Louisiana project, I, of course, called on the best New Orleans musicians I knew, and they were gracious enough to say they'd like to be part of it.
Well, what is it about Louisiana and Cajun culture that made you want to explore this kind of music?
Well, it goes back originally to my first exposure to Dr. John's playing when his first Gris Gris album came out, and then when I was lucky enough to have him come and play on my first album, the Midnight at the Oasis album. He came and played piano on a few cuts, and he turned me on to Professor Longhair's music and James Booker's piano playing. And that New Orleans piano style has such a roll to it, you know. It's the roll part of rock and roll. And it's just a very sensual, laid-back, rhythmic kind of emotional, kind of passionate kind of music that I love. What I like about it, the city is a very Mediterranean city. It's a true melting pot. I know that's such a sort of almost a corny word, but you had Africans brought over from Africa, you had Haitians, you had French people from France, you had the Acadian French who came down from Canada, you had Spanish people, you had Indians, you know, Native Americans that were all living there in this rich delta area. And so you can imagine all those rhythms getting together. I mean, gumbo is, you know, the perfect example. Gumbo is to food with what the musical style is. It's just a mixture of all kinds of great, very spicy, flavors.
You have immersed yourself in so many different musical schools, almost like a gumbo of musical schools, how appropriate.
So to speak.
How has this affected what you do?
Well, I guess it's made it more interesting, I would say. I mean, my musical career, although most people hear my name and immediately think of Midnight at the Oasis, but that was almost an anomaly in a long career that really is an odyssey through various forms of American roots music. At one time I was passionately into bluegrass, and I actually had a group, this is a little known fact, called Maria and the Washington Square Ramblers with David Grisman when he was still in high school and I was barely out of high school. And you know, at another point it was jug band music, and I was in a couple of jug bands that sort of got notoriety in the 60s. And I've been into blues, I've been into gospel music, I've been into jazz. And there's so many wonderful styles of music that are not commercial pop music styles that, although some of them were in their day, I'm more interested not in a gimmicky kind of musical formula that'll get me a top 40 hit. I'm interested in really rich, authentic music. So it probably has not been the most financially rewarding, but certainly the most artistically, creatively, and musically rewarding way to go for me, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Has that ever? Have you ever wished it were more financially rewarding?
Well, sure. Don't we all wish what we do more financially rewarding? But when I look back at it, I've got albums that I've done over the years that people are still asking for songs off those albums, and that means that they have a timeless authenticity to them. I don't write myself, so I have to go to my favorite songwriters, people like J.J. Cale and Dr. John and Leon Russell, and there's a lot of really fun, the McGarrigle sisters, for instance, who write songs that are timeless. You know, I don't know, and I want to start the sentence out by saying I really love Madonna and love most of what she's done, but I wonder if in 20 years people are going to be wishing they could hear Material Girl, you know.
I don't know.
But I feel that that's my goal, no matter what style I'm performing in, if I'm doing a jazz album or a bluesiana album, is to pick songs that express something very real that everyone can relate to.
When you hear Midnight at the Oasis, what do you think nowadays? What do you think of your...
What do I do it?
Or when you just listen back to the recording that you did.
It sounds like this sweet, innocent girl, which I guess I was when I did it. And it's such a beautiful tune. And the part of the magic of that song was a collaboration with Canada's own Amos Garrett, who is just a wonderful, wonderful guitar player. And I always say, well, that I've had several failed marriages in my life, but the one marriage that survived the test of time has been the marriage of my voice and his guitar sound. And in fact, I imported him from Calgary to come down to New Orleans. He's the only non-Louisiana musician on the album.
On this album, you have songs that have an incredibly sultry quality to them. It's could show Madonna a thing or two, I must say. And the pinnacle of that for me is Don't You Feel My Leg.
Right.
You first recorded that record 20 years ago.
With Dr. John, yeah.
And then you re-recorded it for this album.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide to redo it?
I thought it was a fun song and that it would be well worth introducing a new generation to. I mean, what in this day of people getting on MTV and grabbing their crotch and doing all sorts of very explicit things, I thought a little taste of some of the more old style, a little more coy, saucy, naughty, bawdy kind of blues would be a fun thing to expose some new audience to. Also, it's a very classic New Orleans blues, written by Danny Barker and performed by his wife Lulu Barker on a recording, a 78 they did in about 1939-1940, and they are now in their mid-80s. They're still live. I mean, they are the cornerstone of the musical community of New Orleans. He played banjo and guitar with Cab Calloway. He's still doing gigs. She's bedridden, and you know, I call her up to see how she's doing every once in a while, and she says, yeah, Danny just went out, he had a gig over on Bourbon Street, you know. So I thought, if they can make a few bucks in royalties, God bless them. And so for those three reasons, I decided to re-record it, and we made it different, and just had more fun with it, you know. And whereas on the first one I'm kind of coy, on this one I'm just kind of, I don't know, just there's a lot more innuendo, and it was just fun. I mean, I think what's happening on TV, the Madonna-type videos and stuff, they're taking it too damn seriously. They're, like, making sex some kind of perverted yet very serious, overly serious thing. And it should be playful, and that's the spirit in which the song was written, and that's the spirit in which Dr. John and I do it. And I think it's just lighthearted and fun and funny.
Thank you very much, Maria.
Well, thank you.
Maria Muldaur here in Vancouver with me.